Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. This is Leslie Dorries. Today's show is going to be a little bit different than the last few shows, because in many of the previous shows, there's been an emphasis on the need to take ownership of your own stuff if you want to have a good relationship. And frankly, I want to have a good relationship with you, my listeners. When I started the show, my goal was to provide helpful information on how to have a good marriage because I truly, truly believe it's possible. I wanted to take the fear and confusion out of what can be a wonderful relationship. And I was hoping that it would be engaging and useful without being too preachy or abstract. If you've been listening from the beginning, I thank you, because it hasn't always been a smooth ride. Stepping out into public is not at all a comfortable place for me, but my passion for changing the perceptions and practice of marriage got me past that. I believe I was gaining ground, and the shows were getting better overall. Unfortunately, that hasn't been true for the last couple of shows, and I owe you an apology. To be honest, there were some things happening behind the scenes in my private life that needed my attention. I was hoping that no one would notice, but that wasn't really fair to you all. I was hoping that the distraction of discussions about sex would provide me cover because, hey, let's face it, sex is distracting. But the shows have been unfocused and somewhat repetitive. Sometimes repetition is helpful because you can hear something from one person that you can't hear from somebody else. And that will be intentional on my part sometimes. Sometimes I do want to present the information in different ways. But that wasn't completely what was happening here, however. And if I'm honest, I need to own that. The entire time I've been working on the show, my mother-in-law has had some serious medical challenges. I thought I was doing a pretty good job keeping my private stresses separate, but after listening to the last couple of shows, I realized that that really wasn't working. In the beginning, when my learning curve for being on the air was pretty high, I don't think it showed too terribly much. But in the last month, as I got more comfortable with the show and she got worse, it became harder to keep all the balls in the air. Inevitably, at least one was going to come crashing down. It's like a cartoon I used to keep on my refrigerator. It was a single drawing of a woman on the therapist's couch with the therapist sitting next to her, you know, taking careful notes. And she says to the therapist, "I was doing really, really well taking one day at a time. Then a couple of days got together and ganged up on me." That's kind of how I feel the last several months. Because despite my best efforts, the various aspects of my life ended up spilling all over each other. And while it's perfectly natural and understandable under the circumstances, I really do believe it's important that I acknowledge it. Okay, so maybe you're asking, why am I telling you this? Why should you care? After all, you don't really know me. Well, that's part of the reason why I'm telling you this. Because if I don't want to come across as some isolated expert who really doesn't understand what's going on in your life, and I really don't want to come across that way, then I have to be more real and open about what's going on in mine. The other reason I think it's important is because what I have been doing in this difficult period in my life may actually be something you're doing in yours. You put one foot in front of the other, keeping up a good front and telling everyone that everything's fine when it's really not, although we think that's what we're supposed to do. Being exposed and being vulnerable is not something that we think we're supposed to do, and it makes most of us really uncomfortable. But I've been learning over the last several months that this is really an important thing to do. Yes, there are going to be people who aren't really interested in what's happening to you. And truly, that's okay. But we often never really test out how many of these uncaring people or uninterested people there are. It's safer just to assume that this is everyone, and we just therefore limit the possibility of being rejected. If you already have a lot on your plate, like I have, why take the chance of adding more stress and discomfort? For some of us, including me, putting your head down and plowing ahead on your own, not depending on others who might never be there, is just the way we roll. But if I'm honest, it's pretty darn lonely. And as I'm learning, it also isn't true. How can someone be there for us if they don't know there's a problem? Like most things, extreme independence is as unhealthy as complete neediness. My mother-in-law, like me, tended to the former of that extreme independence. The church she attended for her entire adult life prides itself on taking care of the family of the deceased. For years, I heard her tell stories about being one of those kind ladies serving the pre-service family luncheon and the post-service reception. Over the past 2 years, she stopped attending the church because her health had declined, even though she really didn't need that much extra help. She would tell me on occasion how hurt she was because over time, the church members stopped reaching out to her. But talking to those kind, wonderful lunch ladies at her funeral, so many of them talked about how much they missed her and about all the efforts that they had made to engage with her, efforts that she continuously and repeatedly declined. She never made the connection between her refusals to accept their offers and their stopping asking her to come. This may be like what's going on in your marriage. You don't make the connection between what you are doing and what you're getting back from your partner. Like my mother-in-law, you may only be able to see what your partner is doing and how much it hurts you. But every single relationship that we are in, whether it's a friendship or a working relationship or most importantly our marriage, is a function of what each person puts in and what each takes out. It's hard to keep asking when the answer you always hear is no. It's unfair to expect someone to read your mind and know that they want the opposite from what they just told you they wanted. I truly get why it's easier to do things yourself rather than ask for help, especially when you know what needs to be done. We do this all the time. We do it if we're moms, we do it for our kids, we do it because we just, you know, we see that something has to be done, and instead of asking, then we just get upset. We do it ourselves, and then we get resentful. I remember a time when my daughter was little, and when she was, I have two children, my son's older than my daughter, and when my daughter was in preschool, all I had to do was throw her clothes on her, chuck her in the car, and take her off to preschool, and she'd get breakfast and lunch at the preschool. But when she started kindergarten, it was about the time I started my business, and my son was already in school, I was getting myself ready to go, she needed to be now gotten ready to go, and there I am flying around my kitchen trying to get everything ready to go. Three lunches, three breakfasts, whatever, and I look over at the kitchen table, and there's my husband reading his newspaper and eating his Raisin Bran, completely oblivious to the slamming cupboards and everything else that was going on in the kitchen. And I just got so frustrated, and I almost yelled at him for help. But luckily for him and everybody else, I put on my other hat, and I just asked him, "Hey, honey, could you please get our daughter her breakfasts in the morning?" And from that day until the day my daughter went to middle school, my husband got her breakfasts. But it never would have happened if I hadn't asked. He didn't know all that went into it because I had never told him. And so if I had stayed in my independent state, I never would have gotten the help I was asking for, the help that I really, really needed. So I get why it's easier. But and standing on my own and doing all that stuff makes me feel competent. Maybe it makes you feel competent too. Maybe it feels like I'm needed and I'm necessary, and it gives me a reason to get up in the morning. And that's great until, like my recent shows, the cracks start to appear. And by the way, sharing eases the load. There's a famous line about no man is an island separate unto himself. We're in this together. And if you think about it, think about how easy it is to break one stick that's just sitting there by itself. It becomes a little bit harder if you have two sticks bound together. And it's even harder still if you have a bunch of them tied up. This is the strength of community. And it's this sharing, it's this community that connects us. It's why we have rituals like funerals and weddings. It's why stories are so powerful and they're able to touch you. Because in those stories that really get to you, something resonates with you about them. But here's the deal. You have to be willing to act on those connections. Right now, in my life, I'm working with four other women in a business group, and we're helping each other through some pretty challenging times. Two of us are actively dealing with, in my case, the grief of somebody who's actually died. In the case of this other woman, somebody who is currently dying. Another one's daughter has just lost a friend in an unfortunate accident that is very, very, very similar to an incident that happened to the fourth woman years ago. And we meet as part of the business group, and we talk about that, but we take time out to deal with the personal challenges. And despite my habit of going it alone, we recognize that there's no real way to separate out the different parts of our lives, and so we make time to support whatever is happening. And I got to tell you, being this open and accepting of support is really an odd place for me to be, but I'm really learning to let it in. In fact, that's actually one of my goals for this year, is to learn to ask for and accept support. And some of this may ring true for you, and it's important to pay attention to how this might be impacting your marriage. Now, hopefully, the illness and death of a loved one is a very rare event. But it's part of life, and therefore it becomes part of your marriage. Whatever's happening in your life, whatever it is that you're experiencing, you may think that you have your feelings under control, kind of like I did, and that to the outside world, you are everyone's rock. But we're actually kidding ourselves. Those feelings are actually oozing into your work, your sleep, your relationships. And when we get stressed and pulled in every direction, which seems to be the common experience these days, these things can undermine our relationships if we let them. So what I'm learning is that it's okay to experience the emotions I'm having. It's okay to let other people, especially my partner, in to offer me support and comfort. That British way of keeping a stiff upper lip may be appropriate at times, but I'm honestly thinking those times may be rarer than most of us risk. I'm learning that real connection is only possible if I open up and be vulnerable. And it's what I want to create in this hopefully really honest, really, really open discussion about marriage. And I invite you to join me in this adventure. I promise to be better at making it entertaining and an entertaining and engaging journey. So, and I just want to thank you for listening to that and remind you that you're listening to Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. And so in keeping with this commitment to create connection, I now want to shift the focus of the show back to you.
As you know, not only do I want to try to give my listeners practical advice on how to improve their relationships, I also like to give them real advice about where to go if they are looking for some help and So today with me, I have Dr. Scott Terry. He is the Executive and Clinical Director of Ardent Counseling Center, and he is the founder of Restarting Relationships. So, Scott, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you is because I really liked that concept of restarting relationships, because everybody, you know, many people think that when things start to go a little south, there's nothing that they can do. You know, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy that once things start going a little south, then the end is inevitable. And, you know, based on the name of this, Restarting Relationships, I think you're going to be offering my listeners something, an alternative to that. So can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. But I could also start with the main point that you just brought up, which is when things start going bad, the thing that we need to remember is when you're in a hole, stop digging. When things are going bad, stop making it worse and stop creating it. And when the relationship has gone down a certain direction, sometimes what you need to do is actually set up a new relationship based on new rules. And hopefully with the same person.
Right.
But it's getting that you can't revive what was, especially if it's already gone down the tubes and it's already not there.
Right, because
people
talk about wanting to recapture the beginning, but something can only be new once. And I like the idea that you don't recreate the old relationship, you create a new and better one.
Absolutely. And it's based on new rules and a new way of being together and a new possibility of being friends and being connected and actually looking at both aspects of one is how do you really connect to another person, that passion, that feeling, that experience, but to not just get lost in that, but to also look at how we're coordinating our lives together, having a similar vision, getting up at the same time, going to sleep at the same time, actually having a life that works and coordinates together. And so having both aspects.
Right, and
essential.
That's really important in this day and age when everybody seems to be so stressed and so pulled in every possible direction. It seems like the one thing that takes the greatest hit is their relationship. So is restarting relationships, is that a retreat? How do they work? What is restarting relationships?
What I've set up is a rather unique kind of possibility for people. And I think of it as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is people create what they want to create. They could either come to me in Iowa or to some of my therapists in Chicago, or I've had clients on the internet in Aruba.
Mm-hmm.
I've had sisters in New Jersey and in Chicago and wherever. And so it's not just couple relationships.
Right.
And sometimes the other partner doesn't show up. And it's just you getting that you need to have a new relationship with yourself.
And that's so important, because a lot of people think that if I can't get my partner to do it, then there really is no hope. But you and I both know that by changing what you're doing, but what one person is doing, they can alter the relationship.
Absolutely. And that's what's known as being systemic about things. You have to think, if you're changing, then somebody will change in relationship to you. You can never get somebody to change. You want your partner to quit smoking. If they actually do quit smoking based upon you nagging them to death, then they'll pick up some other habit, and then they will always resent you. They need to choose for themselves. We're all independent thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take away somebody's power, no matter how bad it is, no matter how wrong what they're doing isn't working, you need to come back to they need to be independent. But if you're changing and then they're responding to you and changing because you've now changed, then you've got the possibility. But the retreat – oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I think you were going right where I was going to ask. So tell my listeners about the actual retreats themselves.
So the actual retreat, somebody, let's say they come out to me in Iowa, for example, and I've had people spend 4 days, 9 hours a day, and really get into past the inertia, past the emotions, past all the thoughts, and let's get down to action. Let's get into creating a life that actually works. And sometimes it really takes that intensity to get past things. And so it can't be just a weekend counseling session of an hour here and there.
Right.
It's like, no, I need to really go for it. And so I've had people...
It's an intensive experience.
It's an intensive experience, and it's really creating what works for you. So, like I said, I've had some people who had lots of money, and they've come for 9 hours a day for 4 days and wanted 2 to 3 therapists there at all times. And I've had people come in for, I don't know, a day, and just let's rethink things. Let's get what's working and what's not working and get a sense of it all. And let's get to a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move from a vision, which is about who we are, to our goals, which is about why are we doing what we're doing, to getting a game plan of what do we actually do, and then getting those action steps.
Right,
today,
and I love that idea because it goes along with what I try to talk about acting intentionally. Why are you doing what you're doing, and is it getting you to where you want to go? So it sounds like these are personalized opportunities. It's not just a one-size-fits-all, but it's very individualized for the couple and or the individual.
Absolutely. And everybody is different.
Mm-hmm.
And every couple is unique.
Right.
And it requires something different. And the mess that you've driven yourself into,
mm-hmm.
and yes, you created your mess. Nobody makes you a victim. You create your own victimness. And the mess that you created, you need to clean up, which means that you could take control over your life again.
Right.
And that's really what the bottom line is. And so, yeah, so sometimes it might mean that here's the unique circumstances of my situation. And I've had people that have come to me that are already divorced but want to move on with their life.
Mm-hmm.
Or want to become just friends with their partner instead of enemies as they're divorcing.
Right. So it's all about dealing with those negative emotions and finding a better way to move forward.
But it's not even the emotion. The emotions are just step one.
Right.
You know, what are we experiencing? And acknowledge what we're experiencing.
Uh-huh.
Stop with the judgments and the shame and the guilt and the remorse. And get past that to what am I making it mean? What have I made it mean? And what do I want to now make it mean so I can act and get my life to actually work? Because if you're in your head, thinking more in your head doesn't get you out of your head. If you're in your emotions, being more in your emotions doesn't get you out of your emotions. It's
so,
like allowing yourself to get to that next stage.
So would this be a useful process for people who aren't, quote, in trouble, unquote, but just kind of...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So, I've had people who, you know, premarital counseling, and things are great,
right.
but they want to get on the same page.
Right.
They want to make sure that
they stay healthy.
Absolutely. To people that are on the verge, to people that have already passed that verge and have already done the most destructive things, to people that are already getting divorced, to people that are already divorced. To people that have been divorced and now want to think about the next stage.
Right.
It doesn't matter where in the life cycle of the relationship you are at.
Well, this sounds like a really useful and effective experience. Can you tell my listeners how they could become a part of this?
Absolutely. So feel free to give me an email or a shout at any time. My phone number is 641-233-8273. That's 641-233-8273. My email is Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at ardentcenter.com. Ardent isn't passionate. Ardent, A-R-D-E-N-T.
Uh-huh.
So Scott at ardentcenter.com.
Terrific.
But, you know, we'll contact you. But the main point is really deciding, I'm just a tool.
Right.
How do you want your life to actually work for you?
Right.
It doesn't have to be suffering and pain. It really can work for you now.
Right. And so what I'd like to tell my listeners is that, you know, if you're ready to take action, if you're ready to learn to do it differently, Continue to listen to my show, and also feel free to contact Dr. Scott Terry at the Ardent Center, A-R-D-E-N-T Center, and you know, let's get started today. Scott, thanks so much for being with us, and I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Oh, well, thank you. I love your show, by the way. It's fantastic.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Join me next time when my guests will be Esther Lesteek and Dr. Joni Frater, co-founders of Sex Ed Bootcamp. We will be talking about the four pillars of healthy relationships that are at the heart of their program, Loving Right. You've been listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net, and this is Leslie Dorries. Until next week, stay loving.